Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka. Every week, we preview and review the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. We got a really, really good show this week. I'm all hyped up. So, first of all, Mr. Jason Polioff, welcome back. How's it going? How you been? How's the family?
Hi, Justin.
Huh? Oh, yeah, not amped up, huh?
Oh, no. I'm actually very amped up for this. This is going to be fun.
So. We got some good stuff to talk about. This past week we had some good books to come out, if nothing else, that are definite debate starters, I think, more than anything else. First off, and this is one that's been notoriously,
debated
on between show. Us, yes. And I'm hoping that this one will be the great hope, the great turnaround. And that's Red Hood and the Outlaws.
The Great Red Hope.
I know you had said previously that really one of your biggest, maybe not the biggest, but a very big problem with the book is that you didn't like Starfire's personality and the things that they had done with her and the way that they treated the character. And I felt that in this book, they finally started kind of taking a turn with her a bit and giving her more of that sort of personality and intellect that had really been vapidly missing from the previous books. So I got to ask, is it a changer? Is this a game changer for you?
It's not a game changer.
Ah, son of a...
They tried.
I was hoping so bad.
There was still not enough there. There was very little. And from what was there, I could still put her in that personality if she's just a horny dog. Yeah. Let's face it. The story goes on. She discovers Jason Todd after he's been in an explosion, brings him, nurses him back to health.
In the nude.
That I think is a side story to it, because I think that's just, okay, wait. Nudity is a thing. It's a side element of this. It's not relevant to the case. I think where Starfire comes from, there isn't modesty, which explains her costume. It explains, or the personality that she has to some extent. The problem is there's nothing behind that personality. So, yeah, she wants to sleep around because that's what you do. You show affection to somebody that way. But there's still nothing behind her as a personality behind that. It's still very flat.
Okay, so we've gotten the chocolate coating, we haven't gotten the nougaty filling.
Yeah, there's still not, and again, yeah, I previously described her as a horny dog, and yeah, a horny dog will come up and lick the wounds of somebody that's been injured. Yeah. Okay. And that's really what she's doing for Jason Todd. Oh, here's somebody that's injured, let me nurse him back to health.
She's just really giving him a little bit of help. But by the end of the book, I think she does show, at least if nothing else, some insight into dealing with Todd. The conversation they have on the beach, I thought, was, it opened her up a bit more and I think gave her a little bit of substance that definitely wasn't there before. I had a different gripe with this book. I still like it, but my issue with this one was that, and I don't know if this was an art change, but they made Jason look like a child.
Well, this was also Kidd's been that much older of a story, based on, you know, how long Jason's had to be around between training in the Mystic Mountain of wherever he was, mm-hmm. versus, you know, being Batman's apprentice, which had to have happened before that, mm-hmm. and him being dead for a number of years before he was training in the mountains.
Right.
So, you know, with Batman having only started, you know, made public 5 years prior to the timeline of this story, you know, how much time has there been? Yep, and maybe it's been 5 years. Maybe he was off training for 5 years.
Right.
Came back, started doing those things that we saw at the beginning of this issue that wind up getting him blown into the water and knocked unconscious.
Well, no, all this is happening before the start of the series.
Before the start of the series, but the beginning of this issue.
Right. Okay, right.
So, and the actual end of this issue is actually him discovering where Arsenal is, which would lead you to the beginning of the series where they go and rescue Arsenal.
Exactly. Well, but my problem with him being young in this isn't necessarily that he is young or that they put a particular age to him. It's the depiction that they made of him in contrast to how he's been acting in the books since then chronologically. Because in the other books, he's very much the never let him see you cry, the stoic, very like hard-assed kind of character. And in this book, he wakes up and he's like an infatuated child. Wide-eyed, blinking, babbling like an idiot, which is completely out of character from how he's been in the other books.
It's like a quarter. You get one side, and here's the way that we're acting. I'm the hard ass. I'm, you know, this is me and I'm up against the world and I don't give a damn about anybody. Mm-hmm. You flip it over and you get the scene that you had on the beach with Starfire, that's a bit more sensitive side of him that you see in this book. But I really, you look at it on the side, it's a quarter. It's not very thick. There's not much there.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, that's what I feel with a lot of these characters. Yeah. You got one side, you got another side, but there ain't much in between.
You talking about characters specific to this book or to the DC reboot? Oh, okay.
We could probably find other characters in the DC reboot to have this discussion with.
Mm-hmm.
But we're discussing this book right now, so yeah. We'll keep it there. Yeah. Again, you know, I feel like she's kind of being treated as this dog.
Let me ask this then. Where would you want to see her progress instead? Like, how would you want to see her filled out as a character? And I know that's kind of a loaded question, especially if we talk about Power Girl later. But
filled out as a character with, you know, the art that Rocafort's doing for this, you know, the opening book for this series, you know, mm-hmm. where she's on the beach and flipping the hair back.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got that covered, if that's how you want to go with it.
But no, I'm talking more of personality-wise. Like, how would you want to see her personality fleshed out? Like, what is it that you want to know or see about her?
Hasn't done anything in this book. She's blasted a couple of things with beams, and she's pulled Jason out off the beach. And the hint that was going, oh, wait, there might be something there, is they kind of hint that she's had the relationship. Well, they say flat out she's had the relationship with Dick Grayson,
right.
Nightwing. And, you know, of course, you see a Robin costume, a Nightwing costume, apparently some sort of a Batman costume takes over with the red hat on it.
The Red Hood costume, I think, isn't it?
Well, that's what Jason's wearing.
Red Robin.
No, I don't know. Because
Red Robin was Jason Todd, and then Tim took it. Okay, right.
If you even go back to old DC continuity, which we're technically not allowed to do.
We don't know
what happened in the old DCU that's currently going on in the new DCU. They're revealing it to us as we go along.
I was going to say, I mean, they haven't said that they can't go back to the old DCU, but they're trying to avoid it because they want to do the whole new push.
They're saying there are things that have happened in the old DCU that have happened in this universe.
Right.
But we're going to be revealing them to you piece by piece. So she was a member of Teen Titans. She did have a relationship with Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about all that we know of her past, and then for some reason she left that and came here. Yeah.
And has the, like, quasi-amnesia and some other stuff going on.
The amnesia is actually part of her character. Yeah, from the beginning they've stated they experience something and then they move on. They don't dwell on things, they live in the present. Which again is another thing they brought up in this book, living in the present.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't remember the past, if you don't have ties to the past, how can you learn and move forward? Because you'll try and invent something, it won't work. You'll just invent the same thing again. If you get lucky and stumble on something different, you might go, oh, okay, this worked. And then you go and try and add on, and eventually you're going to get back to stuck to a point where you're going, let me try this. And you're trying something you tried 10 times ago that didn't work, and it's not going to work now because it didn't work 10 times ago. Well, but you don't remember you tried it.
Here's the thing then. I'm trying to think of how best to phrase this. Is it that they haven't depicted that particular aspect in this character so far, or do you think that's a fundamental flaw in the character design to begin with?
I think...
Because what you're saying is that particular style of character is going to do those types of actions. They're going to reinvent the wheel because they don't remember inventing the wheel.
Right.
But they could actually make a character out of that, make that character interesting, but the question is, how do you take that and make it interesting?
I think he was going for naive, and I think he missed the mark on naive.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, there's a character that's wondering what's going on, that's trying to figure things out, that doesn't quite get what's happening or understand the full social protocols of what's going on around them. But
you actually made a great comment last week when we were hanging out. We were watching old Buffy episodes.
Yes.
And it was Anya.
The demon who spent 5,000 years tormenting men for being jerks to women in relationships, now she's in a relationship, but she doesn't know how to be a human. So she sees these social conventions, but doesn't quite understand the nuance of it.
Okay.
And
then again, we are talking about holding up a writing, bar that is Joss Whedon. So can we really expect people to reach that level of, drooling all over him right now. I mean,
This is DC Comics. This isn't an indie comic that you're picking up off the shelf.
They should be able to do things of that level.
You know, DC Comics has their pick of writers and artists. The only people they're not getting have exclusive contracts with Marvel.
And aren't on them yet.
Or are independents that go, I want to do my own thing. I refuse to work for a company like DC or Marvel.
And
there's very
both.
There's very few of those because, let's face it, DC and Marvel are the ones that can pay you. Uh-huh. Almost everything else, you're getting your money on the back end if you see it at all.
Yeah, with a risk, so.
So there's very few people that can work outside of Marvel and DC and really make that money. So the talent level that we should be seeing at Marvel and DC should be big.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I just am not feeling that this writer's hit the mark with any of these characters. I feel a lot of that, for the most part, the characters in this book are pretty two-dimensional. Roy's started to fill out some. He's like a quarter-inflated beach ball right now.
Interesting way to put it.
Well, it's mostly flat, but there's still a little air there.
Let's go with a frisbee with a bottom lining. I think that works pretty yeah. well. And you can flip them over, you can turn them into a dish. You know, scoop them stuff.
So.
Okay. I think we've beat that one.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep fighting for this book. I'm gonna keep trying to push it. I'm gonna keep trying to make you like it. Maybe they'll change writers at some point and it'll turn around.
This was a step in the right direction. So. Okay. I'll give you that it was a baby step.
Go ahead.
You start everything with baby steps.
Yeah.
And, yep. Yeah, hopefully, you know, from what Eddie Braganza says, they got plans for all these books.
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked, are we going to see more Outlaws? And there was silence from the panel. So they will either confirm or deny that.
Was there silence or was there furtive glances to the side?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not confirming.
Everybody's like,
nor
shooting looks over at,
I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay.
So we may see some more Outlaws, you know.
Or as I heard Jim Butcher say in an interview once, I'm not telling.
Yeah, which.
Okay.
So there's a lot of. I think maybe keeping it at this will allow, you know, maybe adding another character will provide them with the added stuff they need to fill out these characters more interaction.
Something that they could all kind of catch on
to. In the writer's defense, Starfire has been in the background for a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
She's barely there. She's just kind of a background figure, really. She's a supporting, not a lead in this.
Mm-hmm.
Bring her to the forefront, and we might be able to give her a personality.
We could only hope.
Okay, moving on.
Next one we're going to talk about, this is number one for this week, and this is from IDW, if my memory serves correctly.
Yes, IDW.
Peter Panzerfaust, which I didn't really hear that much about this coming into it, and you mentioned it to me. I saw like some cover art, and I'm like, oh, that looks kind of interesting. And then you said, duh, Peter Pan, and I went, oh, I totally didn't freaking catch that.
Yeah, I saw this, and my mom is a huge Peter Pan fan, so I grew up watching the Disney cartoon, watching the Mary Martin play.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've had, you know, Peter, you know, I've read the book. I've yet to see the play live, but I think they were just in Orlando, so I might have to go.
Oh, okay.
So they were coming in, and so if they're still coming, I might be going to see that.
Really?
But, you know, to see Peter Pan taken and molded in this direction, the premise of this book, Peter Panzerfaust, is Peter is an American boy mm-hmm. in his mid-teens, I'd say somewhere 14 to 16, probably.
I would actually push him along.
Yeah,
no, he still has to be a boy.
Maybe even...
I'd say 16, 18, because he's like pushing that adult-ish range.
Yeah, and he's come to France during World War II.
Yeah, I forget which... Yeah. They said what town, and I don't recall which
one.
Yeah,
and it's actually one of the big occupations from the Germans.
Right.
And it's actually right at the point where the British are pulling out of the town and the Germans are taking over. At the beginning of this story, you know, it's actually bookended. Actually, not entirely bookended because it's only the beginning of the book that's bookended with a character that we learn is Tootles, one of the lost boys from the traditional Peter Pan stories.
Oh, and he's
and Tootles is
talking
to... with either, I don't know if it's a psychiatrist or just somebody that he's explaining his life story to.
Yeah, somebody like a biographer or something.
And that bookends the story of how Tootles in this orphanage meets Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, this is definitely, yeah, these aren't the 8-year-old kids that you're used to seeing, like, in the Disney movies.
Yeah, these are kids that have been in the thick of it, that are going through what's arguably one of the worst moments in human history. Not necessarily one of the worst.
But when their orphanage gets bombed, Peter shows up to lead them to safety.
Right.
And, yeah, at the end of this book, you realize, okay, you got the twins, you've got Tootles, and I'm sure we're going to start seeing a couple of other names from right. the Pan mythology pop up in here.
Which I wanted to point out, one of the things that was, I think, blatantly missing and was an alteration on the standard Peter mythos is that there isn't a Wendy.
Well,
there is the woman that he's looking for, whose name is Belle. But the whole thing with the Wendy character in the Pan mythos is that she's this mother character for the boys, and not necessarily who Pan was looking for specifically. It's somebody that he came across.
Well, I think what we're going to see, yeah, my personal thoughts are Belle is Pan's mother, and Pan is actually looking for Belle. During this, he realizes he's got to say...
Oh, why did I not... Duh, I'm an idiot.
During this...
Tinker...
Okay, Tinkerbell, and I was actually wondering.
I didn't just click.
I was actually wondering where Tinkerbell was going to come in here. You're saying Tinkerbell now, so okay, maybe it's actually Tinkerbell, which would be a girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
which lines up if that's his girlfriend to line that up with Wendy coming in later. I'm sure we're
a
going
nice
to
conflict
see it.
Between the two
because there was that jealousy between Tinkerbell and Wendy. When,
right
when Wendy first comes to Netherland, Tink flies ahead. In theory, to tell the Lost Boys to start a welcome party for her, instead she has them form a hunting party for the Wendy Bird and try and shoot her out of the sky.
Right.
So, well, you know, Tink is very jealous of Wendy, and I think that's setting this up.
Yeah. I will say with this book, they've taken lots of liberties. You're taking the story and you're setting it in World War II in itself, which is a rather big liberty because I know the Disney version is set Victorian England-ish, and this is, you know, World War II France. So... There's obviously the big discrepancy there, but,
the Disney's not that old. It's actually probably just, I think it's just post-World War II. Big Ben is there, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's just post-World War II. And so it's not actually that bad of a time period setting for this. The fact that it's actually taking place during the war, that the Pan and the orphans are slightly older, but there was actually still an element of whimsy that was still in here.
Yeah, which was really kind of neat. I mean, you see, they have Peter, jumping from building to building, and as Thule describes it, he ran jump and Peter flew. And then all of them jump after them and, hey, you can fly, you know. There's that, there's the, I'm sorry, we're spoiling the crap out of these because suck it up, people. The ending scene where he jumps out behind a German, soldier after having just executed a, I believe, British military man and howls right as his back, and you can see the guy, you know, stiffen up with the call, which, of course, traditional Peter is the whole rooster crow, cocky will do thing.
Yeah.
Now, a couple things I'm curious about. Where are we going to see a Hook? Because you know a Hook and the Pirates are going to have to...
Somehow I see an SS uniform in there somewhere. But
yeah, I that would make the most sense.
Hook and Smee will be SS.
What I do wonder is if between Wendy and Tink, or Wendy and Belle in this case, if there's going to be a nationality difference with them. And if it'll be something along the lines where... Belle is going to actually be, because there was the whole thing in World War II where Southern France had collaborators with the Germans during the occupations, that Belle might end up being one of those collaborators, which follows in line with the story of her getting Wendy captured and all that other kind of
stuff. Actually, to have them be, you know, part of the French Revolution against the Germans, and to have her turn on the revolution would actually be more in line with the traditional story.
Ooh, I just had a thought. Inglorious Lost Boys.
Okay, we're gonna keep Tarantino out of this.
I think it'd be funny.
I think you're gonna get to see plenty of blood in this. Actually, the character that I want to see if they bring in and how they're going to do it. Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
Cause, yeah. We've kind of discussed how they've already can bring in Belle, Tinkerbell, Wendy. Yeah. Even Michael, who will probably also be part of the French Resistance with Wendy.
Yeah.
But.
I'm thinking she's gonna be Swiss.
Completely neutral. It could be completely neutral. Could be in Spain. Could be from Spain. One of these Belgium. Yeah. Could even be Italy, really. Cause even though Mussolini sided with the Germans, you know.
They didn't really.
They
had their own issues that they were dealing with. They didn't really. They had the Northern African theater, which they were very involved in.
Although it would be very hard geographically based on where the story is set, it could be very interesting if Tiger Lily was the Russians.
Oh, that'd be a very good point.
Yeah,
that would make a lot of sense, actually.
Because there's initially the truce, and then they come in and attack.
Yeah.
When the Germans attack the Russians. All that we've really done is discuss that there's a whole lot of possibilities where this could go. It was fun. It still caught elements of that whimsy that you get when you go and see the play or watching the Disney cartoon that are important to this. You know, when J.M. Barrie wrote this, it was for children. It was about being whimsical. At least the play was.
Well, so, not growing up, you know, keeping that youthful energy and that youthful point of view without becoming, you know, the humdrum adults like our.
There were undertones to the book that were much more negative. But when you look at just the play that he wrote, when they first debuted the play, he insisted that they save a bunch of seats and give them to children from the orphanage, and he positioned those children strategically throughout the theater. And by doing this, what he did was he seated the audience because he knew the children would understand and laugh at a lot of the jokes they were seeing on stage.
He was putting in a laugh track.
But the stuff shirt parents that were, and adults that were watching this would not get it until the children's laughter started to infect them.
Huh.
So he seated the audience for that because he knew.
That's news to me. I never heard that before. Yeah. That's
so
interesting.
Again, it's aimed for that whimsical, that child mentality. And I think they capture that despite the fact that it's set in the middle of a war.
Yeah, this is very dark. I mean, there's no doubt this is a dark book. And, just one last thing I want to comment on it is that this thing stops on a dime. You turn the page and you're like, where's the rest of the story? Because there's no the end. There's no to be continued. There's no next issue. It stops on a big open panel and it's done.
There will be another issue. This is an ongoing series.
No,
so
yeah, I know.
Stuck,
but even so, you flip through the rest of the book and you start reading this other comic that's at the back of the book and you're going, what the, this isn't, oh. Anyways, one we're going to talk about this week is, Winter Soldier, which we're heading over to the Marvel camp now. I said, last month that Winter Soldier just isn't really in my wheelhouse. So this might be Red Hood, you know, part two, but with a side split. But this one is slowly starting to grow on me a little bit. And honestly, I have to say it may not even be so much because of the book as it is because I found the, Avengers cartoon on Netflix, and I started watching that with my daughter. Yesterday, I was literally sitting on the couch, eating cereal, watching Saturday morning cartoons with my daughter as a 32-year-old man. I am completely happy with the life choices that led me to that moment. Anyways, so from watching the Avengers cartoon, I was starting to appreciate the Avengers much more, because this was a group that, even when I was reading Marvel Comics back in the early 90s, I never paid a lot of attention to. I was always bigger on the X-Books, which they were the big thing at the time.
Right.
So that makes sense. And, you know, I thought that heroes like Cap were dated. I thought they didn't really have anything to say to that current generation. Same with Iron Man and Hulk and a lot of these other guys, because they had been around for so long and they had been in the public limelight for so long that they felt kind of like a relic of an old age.
Not that the X-Men hadn't been around nearly as long.
But not in the same big spotlight. I mean, did you ever see an X-Men made for TV movie or an X-Men, lunchbox of the same scale of when you would see Spider-Man and Captain America lunchboxes and Hulk lunchboxes? They got the bigger push.
They had the Saturday morning cartoons.
Exactly. And the X-Men didn't. Not until our generation of.
Yeah. Not until the 90s.
Yeah. When all the X-Books got their big push.
The 70s had Spider-Man and his friends.
Yep.
Starfire.
Even Fantastic Four got, you know, at least a little bit of a nudge every once in a while.
So
watching these cartoons has opened me up a bit more to the Avengers. I've begun to understand more of the inner workings of them. So now, in reading Winter Soldier, which, of course, as you mentioned last week, is Bucky and his whole back history. If you want to hear that, listen to the show from last month. I'm beginning to appreciate what's going on in this book a little bit more. It still hasn't completely latched into me yet. I still think this needs to do a lot more.
You mean opening up with an 800-pound gorilla with a chain-fed machine gun and a jetpack isn't enough?
Not that it isn't enough. It just, it's...
actually, I fully understand why that wouldn't be enough, actually.
It's the non sequitur of it. It's you see it and you're like... Because it is such a dark-toned book, and it has these very gritty, realistic elements to it, that when you see a gorilla with a 50 cal and a jetpack, it just takes you completely out of it. You're like, what the... is that?
Well,
honestly, you have spies doing spy James Bondy stuff, sneaking around, kicking people in the face, and then gorilla with a jetpack. What?
To be fair, he was actually introduced at the end of the last issue, but that is the feel that it opened back with him finishing off from where the last book left off. But the first book was about, you know, hey, let's see how far we can get in here as spies before, and first one to get noticed buys dinner.
Now, yeah.
That was one of the themes of the first book. This one picks up where they got discovered and it's going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And it all, but yeah, they get out of that situation pretty quickly, and then they start revealing some of the stuff that's going to be happening and some of the themes that are going on throughout this story arc,
mm-hmm.
or even the length of this book with the other three Winter Soldiers.
Right. Right.
And you know, they actually reveal who all three of them are. They actually give Bucky's first impressions of all three of them.
Yeah, which I thought was good because that gives you a bigger stable to kind of look forward to. And okay, I want to see how these guys, when they come out, how they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah. But how stable? Yeah.
Are some redeemable? Are some way off the deep end? Are some, you know?
Or how close are they going to be to who he remembers? Because
well, that too.
There was one that he was close with. Mm-hmm. Now, that could be great because that could mean that they team up well or that they're able to work together really well. Or he's able to convince him not to do whatever task he's been brought back to do.
On the other hand, going to cause a giant frickin' slugfest.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of things that could go on. And, you know, the plot that's going on here is actually pretty big when you consider who the character is in the DC Universe that's the main target.
Marvel Universe.
The Marvel Universe. Who the main target of the Winter Soldier attack is going to be. Let's face it. Yeah, Dr. Doom.
Oh, that's right. I did like the whole spiel of they knew that wasn't going to work. All they did was piss him off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they knew they were going to piss him off. That's why they did it in the first place.
So, yeah, and maybe it's not actually to go after Doom. It's just to piss Doom off to get him to take the next step.
To instigate him into doing something else to something else to something else.
There's a lot going on in this book, and that's where I really find the meat of this, because it would be flat. If all it was a chimp with a jetpack, it would be kind of flat.
Yeah.
But.
Which, that really feels odd to say, doesn't it?
But when you start adding in that, you know, who are these people that are willing to piss off Dr. Doom? That, why would they want to piss off Dr. Doom for that matter?
Yeah.
Knowing that that's all they're going to do, that they're not going to kill him, they're just going to piss him off.
Make him really, really mad.
So, why do they want to piss him off? What's their end goal? It starts building up a big story that way.
The only thing with that, though, is that it is building this big story, and like you said, there's a lot going on, but it's all going on somewhere else. It's all happening in the background, and it's being talked about, but we're not actually seeing any of it. Exception being Doom on the screen being pissed off, which is still hilarious. But because it's not right there out in the front, you know, it's not the central point of the book, I feel like it's getting lost, like it's becoming part of the noise in the background as opposed to being the meat and potatoes of it.
I think what's happening is this book is... It started with an 800-pound gorilla and is growing from there. And
yeah.
I think you're going to see, you know, with Doom, with the big reveal at the end of this that, mm-hmm. that they're bringing about, that there are big plans in the works here. And as you read issue 3, issue 4, the plans are just going to get bigger and bigger. And the depth of this story, of the layers of who this is affecting, who they're going after, you're going to start to see those get
Do you think this will stretch out into the Marvel continuity proper?
It might. I think they're going to keep it fairly self-contained right now. I think partially they want to see how the book is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Brubaker's been writing Cap. He had an award-winning run.
Now, I was
Cap
thinking they were going to do
back
this.
Winter Soldier. So.
I was going to say, I thought they were doing this as a short run, but I think you mentioned last month. This is an ongoing.
I thought this was an ongoing, but I haven't seen, you know, the first issue came out. It didn't say 1 of 8, 1 of 4, 1 of 12.
Yeah, Marvel's really good about demarking that too. So
yeah, usually at least the first issue, they will. Sometimes they'll drop it off for the second, third. Because in situations such as they had with Orson Scott Card and his Ultimate Iron Man series,
mm-hmm.
it was supposed to be 1 of 4. They put issue 1 came out 1 of 4, then 2 came out, 3 came out, 4 came out, 4 came out, said 4 of 5.
Yeah.
So
just kidding.
It
could have been better. They could have done 5 of 4 and done a Douglas Adams on them.
So
the fifth book in the Hitchhiker's Guide trilogy.
Right.
Love that.
So
all right,
I think this is going to grow and.
I hope it does.
I want to give it a little time. I think part of this is shaky. I do feel there's some shaky legs here. I don't think the banter between Bucky and Natasha is witty and sharp enough. It feels a little forced.
Yeah, it feels forced, definitely. It feels out of place. Like, you know, do your necking with each other off the battlefield. You know, don't take it on the battlefield with you. Be a good team, work well as a team. But don't try to put in the sexy time while you're kicking people.
Yeah, it's the sexy time. They're not, if it was, you know, like what they did in the first book, which is, I can get further into this.
Than you can do the friendly competition before I get detected.
Yeah, that worked. But this one, it wasn't quite there.
The only time that you can have that and it works well is when you get that sexual tension. between the two characters. Like, they're trying not to, but they're impressing each other so much that, like, they can't fight it off anymore kind of thing.
So I...
Oh, God. What? Where did I go with that?
It'll be interesting to see where this one goes. I'm going to keep reading it. Yeah. At least for a little while.
I'm hoping it grows on me. Hopefully, this will turn out to be the slow burn, more of, I think, what you're trying to say that it will be.
Yeah.
Instead of it just not being a slow burn, it's just not catching.
There's been a lot of slow burns coming out in comics lately. There's a lot of them. Some of them have been some of DC New 52.
Well, I was going to say, the entire DC reboot has been a slow burn.
Not all
so
of them. Not all of them. Batman came out pretty strong out of the game.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the universe reboot as a whole. I'm not talking about the individual books that are in it. I mean,
a book like Morning Glories or The Activity, they're slow burns at the beginning.
Morning Glory lives on the slow burn. I mean, that's the, but that one, it's all about the tease. It's all about the what's not there.
Even Ultimate Spider-Man with Miles Morales. Sorry.
I do it all the time too. Don't feel bad.
I'm putting an artist in the costume.
Yeah.
So with Miles.
Why has nobody done that as like a webcomic thing yet?
So with Miles Morales as the new Spider-Man, what was it, issue 4 before you saw him in the costume for the first time?
Yeah, I think so. 4 or 5.
Talk about a slow burn.
They're doing a lot of character intro up to that. Obviously not the character. Well, anyways, talking about the new 52, this is a good point to move on. And let's talk about where you went yesterday and Friday. I was unfortunately not able to go because I had previous obligations that involved, bathroom cabinetry.
Ha ha!
Yeah, bite me. You went to MegaCon.
I said ha ha!
Yeah, thank you. You went to MegaCon.
Yes!
Give me first the overall impressions of MegaCon. How did you feel this measured up to, because you went, did you go last year?
I went 3 years ago, maybe 4 years.
2 years ago. 2 years ago. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe 2 years, 2 to 3 years ago I went.
Okay.
And it's bigger.
Really?
It's continuing to grow.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And yeah. MegaCon is held in Orlando. It's
at the convention center. Right.
And I don't know. It probably is the largest in Florida.
Yes.
There might be one in Miami, but I think this one's the largest in Florida. I know when we went, I think we said it was 3 years ago.
I want to say it's actually probably second biggest in the Southeast.
Right behind Dragon Con.
Right.
So.
For those who don't know, Dragon Con is in Atlanta.
When we went 2-3 years ago, Dan DiDio said it was his first time coming back down for MegaCon in a long time, and he was impressed with the size of the show.
Yep.
And based on that, I'm pretty sure that he's been coming down. Dan DiDio, the executive editor of DC Comics, actually co-publisher now. Sorry,
right.
At the time, he was executive editor. Now he's co-publisher of DC. And I believe he's been coming down every year since.
Yeah, I know he was there last year because I went last year. I know he was there then.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. It's getting bigger, but it's not really exploding. And one of the problems that MegaCon has traditionally had, this one, it was a little bit mitigated because, MegaCon down here in Orlando and KatsuCon up in DC both were this weekend. And these are the first two big, these are the big opening cons. This is the first cons of con season, which of course goes all the way through, all the way out to San Diego. Is San Diego middle or is that the end?
No,
New York is the end.
New York is the end in October.
Yeah, this okay.
DiDio even said at the panel, this is the first con they've been to since October, so.
Okay. So, they get the big push in the sense that nobody's been to cons, nobody's been traveling around or anything, so everybody's vibrant and ready to go at this one.
They're not road weary.
Exactly. So, I'm sure that has a big impact on the size of it. But even as it is, it's still splitting time between here and DC. Cause I know, on the floor, I think you had mentioned that you went by Blind Ferret, which is a webcomic publishing group.
That's right.
The best way to explain it.
They're a webcomics publisher. They publish several different webcomics.
Right. And one of the artists that was on there that wasn't here, was at KatsuCon, two of them actually, Danielle Corsetto, who does Girls with Slingshots, and Randy Milholland, who does, Something Positive.
Meanwhile, Ryan Sommer and Lars,
who do Least I Could Do and Looking for Group.
They were down here with a couple of the other guys from their group.
I'm trying to think who else is in there. I know it's the guys from PvP, I think. No, PvP is Penny Arcade.
Okay.
I'll think of them later. So, but You know, so they end up having to split their duty between the two cons, and they can't get, you know, everybody in one place to really drum up the full impact of it.
Yeah, and looking at the creators out here, and they did bring in some creators. Yeah, you know, Stan Lee was there this year.
Yeah, Stan the man.
So, yeah, and of course, you know, Eddie Braganza and Dan DiDio from DC Comics, they came down from New York.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of the other creators are from lots of other places, but a lot of the creators I know I've seen at this con 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're local to Florida.
Palamati, yeah.
Mike Perkins was there. Right. Yeah. Paul Pelletier. Pelletier, sorry. So there's a number, Amanda Connor. Yeah. There are a number that are local to Florida.
Oh, God, I keep forgetting she's local. Yeah.
Yeah, she's up with Jimmy. So.
Yeah. No, I need to get to a con that she's at so she can do a commission work for me.
She's had a long line, I'll tell you.
I'm sure she did. I've said this before. I'm going to go ahead and put it on record now so people know. I want to have her do a piece of an anachronistic Joker fighting the Rocketeer, where it's almost like a yin-yang sort of thing, like the Joker's shooting up with his big gun with the bang, and the Rocketeer's got his two Lugers out. There's the, you know, the acid squirt from the flowers shooting at him as he's, you know, flying and twisting past it. I got the whole thing in my head. I just got to try to explain it to her in a way that she can get it on paper.
And I'll explain to your daughter why she's not allowed to go to college because daddy spent her money on a picture.
Damn right. Who needs college anyways?
No, certainly not. Actually, now go get a job like Mike Rowe doing dirty jobs.
Hey, there you go. Hey.
They ain't being shipped overseas.
No. Well, and he always says those people are happy. The happiest workers are the ones that are doing these dirty jobs.
All right.
But anyways, you spend some time on the floor. You spend some time on some panels.
Yeah.
I got to say, what was your best cosplay that you saw there?
There were some really good Batmans. There was a great Batman and Poison Ivy duo. There was a Batman and Catwoman duo.
Particular styles, or were they complete custom?
Fairly traditional Batman for both of them. Ivy was fairly Ivy and Catwoman were fairly traditional. There was a group of people there that were the entire Scooby Gang, including a four-foot stuffed Great Dane.
Oh, stuffed. Okay.
But the thing was 4 foot tall. It was massive.
It would have been funnier had they actually brought a Great Dane in and dropped like a eye-seeing dog on him or something.
Yeah.
I doubt they would have gotten away with it, but it would have been funny anyways.
There was a great, group of the villains, styled after the movie villains. They had the Joker, Bane, Catwoman, all from the movies. Penguin, and very similar to the style that he probably would be seen in if he's in the movies.
Oh, the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And Harley Quinn. Very, very much as if somebody commented that she was the version from, Arkham City. Game.
Yeah.
But again, she would have also fit in very well in Christopher Nolan style movies.
Yeah, which oddly come to think of it, in the Christopher Nolan movies, it was actually Joker that played Harley. Hmm. The nurse scene?
Yeah. All right.
That's about the closest you're going to get, so. Okay, so that was cosplayers. Was there anything particular on the floor that really kind of caught your eye more than anything else? Or I'm sure the standard vendors, you know, swords and shirts.
I had a lot of fun talking with a lot of the indie artists about what they were doing, how they were getting their work out there, all the different types of things that they were doing, you know. And because these are the people that are probably most passionate about what they're doing.
Because they have to be.
They can't make any money off of it because they're indies. Yeah. These are people that are selling a book at a time, you know, and there's the people like me walking up to their tables. And yeah, I got a lot of information from these people. I'm going to hopefully be able to go through and order a lot of books from these people through their websites or whatever, bring those in, review those, let you guys know what's good of those, you know, what we read.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of cool stuff like that. Of course, you know, all sorts of artist tables. So. Yeah, you don't have to go to Amanda. You can get just about anybody in the artist alley will be more than happy to draw you something because there's a lot of people there that are unknowns that just want to draw sketches for people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's how they're paying for their booth. That's how they're making their
absolutely.
Money.
Okay. And, sorry, go ahead.
But I think the coolest experience that I had while on the floor was just a fan going through and having some of the artists critique his work and sitting there listening to the artists talking with him, and he was actually a very accomplished artist. He actually had a couple of backup stories in a couple of published comics.
Hmm.
He's still pretty much unknown, but he was talking with some of these big names, showing them his portfolio. They're going through, they're critiquing and going, okay, here's what you did wrong here. Here's,
work on this, work on that, thicken your line here. You see when you do this, it's I would have loved to have heard that. Yeah. Just sit there and just absorb that stuff. That's really cool.
I caught up, you know, just to see who was walking down the aisle, seeing all the artists that were there, and just happened to catch up with him while he was finishing up the critique with one artist. And then he was going down to the next artist at the booth and waited there 5 minutes while the artist finished actually critiquing another guy, mm-hmm. just so they could hear him critique the first guy. And it was an amazing experience just to see, you know, this knowledge being passed from one person to another. And yeah, cause, you know, he could have said, no, I teach art, so I'm not going to do this. Or, you know, I could be teaching art. So, yeah. But the fact that these guys are professional artists and they're willing to pass this knowledge along, they want to help out the other guys.
And they want to help out the industry too. I mean, this could all translate into more workers in the field, which historically, Marvel and DC have always said that the biggest stopgap to books, as far as time-wise, is always the art. I mean, the art takes longer than a story.
Right. Yeah. You know, you got a writer working on 4 or 5 different books oftentimes, mm-hmm. and you got the artist who's only working on one book per month, and sometimes he's falling behind on that book.
Right.
So, yeah. And actually, DC, you can see that a lot. That's why they're changing up the artist team so often, is to get them so that they can have the books come out on time.
So get guys that aren't burnt out.
Yeah, it keeps the guys from getting burnt out. Okay, you take a couple days off or a month off of working on that, and you can get ahead on your next book or get ahead on what you're coming back in on.
Right.
So.
Well, just gonna jump ahead a minute. Okay. So, got cosplay, got the floor, panels. You hit the DC panel?
Yeah, DC had 2 panels, one Friday and one that I caught early Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't do that, cause for those who don't know, DC usually every Sunday, Dan DiDio does his Sunday with Dan. Yeah. Where it's not about DC, it's not about the things going on, although their stuff does come up, it's just about comics, period. Yeah. Love of comics.
Yeah, it's just a Sunday morning conversation is what they usually title it, and they go about, you know, they try and figure out who's been in the room that's been reading comics the longest,
mm-hmm.
Who you started reading with, you know, who your favorite characters are.
What was your first book? Characters. Why did you love that book?
And even though Dan's co-publisher of DC, he's sitting there talking about the time he got off the bus and missed school so that he could pick up his issue of Captain America.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the business lines drop in that one.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, didn't get a chance to do that one. But the 2 panels, the Friday and the Saturday, these were ones that really kind of centered a lot on the new 52, right?
Specifically the one on Saturday was the new 52 panel. The other one was just kind of a DC panel, which looked like it originally was intended to just be Dan DiDio and the executive editor, Eddie Berganza.
Mm-hmm.
And they wound up bringing in Kenneth Rocafort, who happened to be there at the convention as a fan. So they talked him up on stage.
Nice.
He, of course, is the artist for Red Hood.
Yeah, and the Outlaws, right.
And then they also had Tony Bedard in there as well.
That's another local one I forgot to mention earlier.
Yeah. Tony, he's working on Green Lantern, New Guardians.
Yes.
So
I was going to say Core. I'm like, that's not right.
And for the most part, the talent didn't talk. It was actually very similar to a Sunday morning conversation, but focused on DC. Who picked up all 52 books? How many books did you pick up? How many are you still reading? What do you like that we've done?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do better? And it was really just kind of them polling the audience and maybe answering a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that continuously gets brought up at these panels is, when are we going to see Wally West? When are we going to see Donna Troy? When are we going to see Cassandra Cain?
Everybody's asking about their favorite characters. Well, never mind.
Cassandra Cain being the silent Batwoman, the one that had the mask covering her face, with it was just the yellow outline of a bat instead of a solid bat.
Right.
So that was Cassandra, of course. Donna Troy was the first Wonder Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wally West became the Flash after Barry Allen disappeared into the Speed Force. So, yeah, these are favorites, and they're missing. There's been no mention of them at all in any of the books of the 52. In fact, DC said, we're actually specifically not mentioning them because we're not sure how they're going to fit in. We wanted to have these characters that they used to be, you know, Batgirl's represented by Barbara Gordon, the most iconic Batgirl.
Right.
Barry Allen is the Flash, the most iconic Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Donna Troy, of course, is not Wonder Woman. They're having Diana Prince as Wonder Woman, the traditional Wonder Woman.
Oh, right.
So, you know, because they brought the ages down, you know, there's conflicts of how would these characters have been involved with the ages of these characters all being younger,
mm-hmm.
With Barbara actually being brought back into being Batgirl after having her back broken.
Right.
So with all those, they wanted to keep these characters loose. They've said they're not gone.
They're still
Ted Kord's another
one.
Ted Kord being the original Blue Beetle.
Right.
And yeah, they're keeping these characters in their pockets. They're not presenting them out because they don't want to be caught in a corner that we've said something at a con or we've said something in a book somewhere, and now we're tied to having to use that.
Mm-hmm.
So that when they're ready and they've got a story that this character is going to shine in,
they can come out and let them shine.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Okay. So, what else did they talk about?
Actually, one of the first things that they talked about, one of the things that actually was mentioned that stood out to me, and I've heard it before, and Dan reiterated it, and I think it's a great thing to actually start all the panels on,
mm-hmm.
is the fact. And it was brought up because people were asking about not knowing the history of the characters in the New 52.
Oh, okay. Which is something that I think a lot of new comic readers traditionally have a problem with. Yeah. We've had some friends of ours that we've tried to get into comics, or even try to get into this show, and they've said they've had some difficulties because we start talking about things and going on about different continuities, and they don't really get it.
We actually kind of talked about what was happening in Red Hood earlier about revealing what was going on in the past of these characters.
Right.
That was what that issue was about. And what they said is, and Dan DiDio credited Jeff Johns as being the one who brought this idea in that when you meet somebody for the first time, they have a continuity. You don't know what happened to them before you met them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you meet them, you spend some time with them, you talk with them, you're going to find out what happened.
Yeah.
You're going to learn that they were in band or that they played football in high school. You're going to find out that they, you know, worked on the cars. They were a mechanic. They served in the military.
Yeah, or whatever it is, whatever their past is. And this is something actually he brought up for the past couple of years. So this isn't really a new idea for him either.
No, I mean, Jeff Johns brought this to DC a long time ago when he first started in there, is that you don't need to have a beginning. What you need is, you know, to have an open door for people to walk in. And when they walk in, they'll fill in those gaps. And as you bring them forward, they'll start to find out, or they'll go back and they'll specifically gather what they need for the past.
Yeah.
And so you really jump in with both feet. And I think that's an important message. And I think, you know, mentioning that this actually came later in the panel. I think it should have been brought up at the beginning of the panel. Because we all live in continuity. It all needs to move forward.
Yeah. Maybe just start as a question. Okay. And who their first comic was a number one? And I bet it would be a very, very small number out of the panel participants.
That actually is a pretty good point. You know, most of us don't start something on number one. Yeah. Even if it's because a friend gave you a comic to read, said, hey, check this out.
There was something in here that was really cool I want you to see. Yeah. You look at it and you go, oh, man, that really is cool. I want to know what happens next.
Even as a fan now, there's sometimes when it's hard to jump onto something if it's not new. That's why you see Marvel continuously restarting all of their books.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why DC felt it was a good idea to go ahead and restart the numbering on their books with the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, you know, they also talked about Free Comic Book Day. Okay. And,
what about it? First weekend in May.
Yep. And,
important, go support your local comic shop.
Yeah, go to your local comic book shop, you're gonna get free comic books.
Hey, everybody wins.
Yeah. And if they're like our shop, they're gonna try and get some local talent to come out.
Yeah. You know,
we realize not everybody's got local talent near them, but.
Actually, our shop, they'll actually grill food for you if you pay them a few bucks. Yeah, I think last Free Comic Book Day, they were out there, you know, grilling dogs, grilling burgers. I think they even had some steaks on there.
They might need to watch
they have that meat shop that's right kind of around the way. So they go and grab a bunch of stuff, just throw on the grill and have a good time.
So,
I think they feed the talent for free though.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Moochers.
I know for us, they're trying to get talent out there, you know, particularly if you live in New York and California where there's a lot of talent base. A lot of the shops are going to be getting the talent in there to promote Free Comic Book Day. But if nothing else, even if you don't have a celebrity, you got free comics.
Yeah, absolutely.
The DC book this year, it's actually going to be a standalone story, and it's going to feature Pandora.
Which Pandora is, during the reboot, was that sort of unknown figure that kept appearing in all of the new number one books.
Yes. Yeah, some people refer to her as the purple hooded woman. She was in the first issue of all 52 books. She's in Flashpoint at the very end, looking down at the time stream as it all shifts. This story, Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, Kenneth Rocafort, Gene Ha, DC's got a number of creators that are working on this standalone story.
I would dare say their biggest names.
Yeah.
These are the biggest guys doing a free book.
And not only that, it's going to affect the DCU. This is going to affect the entire DC New Universe.
That's kind of unique in that to have a Free Comic Book Day comic that has an impact in the world itself. Normally you don't see that. Normally the zero issues and the whatevers are not necessarily throwaway stories, but they're like a little side thing, a little extra flavor. Not last year, but the year before was the Blackest Night zero issue that came out every comic book day.
Yeah.
The year after that was the Brightest Day zero issue. And now this year it's the reboot.
Yeah.
I suppose number one book, if you want to look at that.
If you're going to do a book, make it pertinent to the to what's going on in your universe.
Make it something that's going to draw people in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, Geoff Johns, Jim Lee, the talents that they got, probably their two biggest named talents right now.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt.
Working on Justice League, stepping in and doing a lot of the work on this. It should be a great thing just to get for free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they talked about before Watchmen, they discussed just a little bit, and that they're thinking it's going to turn out really well because the creators that are working on this wanted to work on it. The creators are excited on it, and they think that's going to show through.
Okay. I know a lot of people have reservations about that and thinking that it may work up something that's so iconic, so well-loved. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of something iconic and well-loved that's going to be changing is Blue Beetle. They're actually moving him to New York City. He's going to be moving out of, is it Texas?
Yeah, I believe right now. Right.
So, yeah, and I know you've been reading Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
And they've said they want him to interact more with a lot of the DC characters, so they're moving him up to New York. And they did the same thing with Static as well.
Well, I was going to say, this is very paralleling what they, I think, wanted to do with Static. So I wonder if they're going to take some of the storylines and the ideas that they had wanted to do with him and let Beetle actually run that line instead. Because considering the technology of the Scarab, I would be greatly surprised if he didn't somehow clash with Star Labs.
Well, Static hasn't actually gone away either. He's going to be part of the Teen Titans. So,
at least
he'll be interacting with them. They haven't said for sure that he's going to be a full-time team member.
He's just not going to have a solo book.
For the time being.
For now.
They're really strong on Static. They really like him from what Dan was saying. They want Static to have a book.
Yeah.
And we know it's been canceled. We've reported on that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to give any spoilers on that the book is going away.
DC
seems to really like and want that character to do well. So I think you're going to see, you know, maybe they'll wind up being a miniseries. Maybe they're going to let him steam in Teen Titans or get him in a couple of other places.
Well, they're not going to let him fade
up through the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah, they're not going to let him fade. That's the biggest thing to really say.
And speaking of the rest of the DC universe, they've been working really hard, Eddie Braganza in particular as the executive editor, on making sure all these stories are interconnected. And one of the first signs that we're going to see of that, aside from, you know, before we even get to Free Comic Book Day with Pandora, is going to be Court of Owls.
Yeah, because there's going to be, we saw this, I think, in the previews we got for this past month, that Court of Owls event isn't going to branch over the Bat books in the coming, in March, I think, is when those are going to hit.
And not only is it covering all the Bat books, but you're going to see elements of it in All-Star Western.
Oh, because that actually occurs in
Gotham.
Gotham, right.
And actually, one of the reasons they liked the idea of doing All-Star Western and Demon Knights is because they can show alternate versions of the DC Universe in ages past without having to do flashback stories.
Yeah.
So, I didn't quite catch it. There may even be elements of it in Demon Knights, but I know it's going to be in All-Star Western.
Okay.
So,
Well, and we've talked about the continuity across the DCU before and how that's really what I think the reboot has done well in that everybody's story affects everybody else's.
Yeah.
Not to harp on that, so.
Dan Jurgens was there. He was talking about what's coming up with Superman starting issue 7.
He's
Jurgens is taking over art. And we got new arc coming up, so the story's going to be changing.
Yay!
Dan Jurgens actually commented, it was really odd having to draw Superman and having to use references to draw Superman. he's lost the spit curl. He's got the armor he's lost the underwear. Yeah. So trying to, but to go along with all of the new look of just the details of the design, he's actually trying to come up with a new physical language. And we're all used to seeing Superman flying with that fist out front, in that near running pose. And he wants to come up with a new physical language for how Superman's going to behave, in those dynamic poses of flying.
And power, the other big aspect of it.
Yeah. Plus, he's a slimmer, trimmer, younger, Superman, and he's got to combine all of that.
Bionic. Bigger, stronger, faster.
And somehow, and you know, the new story arc for Clark and for Jimmy Olsen is going to involve bedbugs. So, yeah. I don't know how much of a spoiler that's going to be. That could be huge. That could be minor.
Out of an odd sort of thing, because I don't know where this came from, wasn't there actually a bed bug, like a very big bed bug problem in New York not too long ago?
Yes. Yes, there was.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense now. Those are scary little fuckers, man. I mean, you can laugh, but I imagine you get some bugs in your mattress that you can't see and are nipping on you all night. You'll have some Kafka dreams.
Yeah, go talk to Matt Myra over the Nerdist.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, back to comic books instead of bedbugs, which may appear in comics. Justice League International, a lot of people have been questioning about the membership recently. And one of the things Jurgens talked about is from the beginning, they'd planned on having a kind of rotating membership. They planned on bringing people in and out of that book.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And, yeah, because they want the different nations. They want the different interactions that you're going to see from the people.
And to do that, I think it would be better almost not to do a rotating cast, but to do almost like the JLU from the old Bruce Timm TV shows, where it's like everybody in one place. So you get that sort of like United Nations conflict thing going on. Because, I dropped this book. It wasn't holding it. The story just wasn't really gripping much there. The villain was, I felt, kind of cliche and not very evocative. So hearing this actually makes me pretty happy.
Well, you're also a Booster Gold fan, aren't you?
I am more now. I liked him actually because of the animated series and the way they depicted him in there. That he was this B-lister that just wanted to go out and shine in the limelight and actually was a fairly decent hero. He's not an A-lister, but he's the best B-lister he can be.
Well, they're going to be going over some of his origin and history in the upcoming JLI story arcs. So maybe that's enough to hook you up, particularly if you're a Booster Gold fan. Yeah. The new kind of origins that they're giving for him.
Okay.
Speaking of new origins, the upcoming Earth 2, where they're going.
Oh, which Earth's Finest?
World's Finest.
World's Finest. World's Finest.
Which is going to be Power Girl and the Huntress.
Which is a dichotomy to, historically, World's Finest being Superman, Batman.
Right. And, of course, Power Girl being the analog for Superman and
Huntress, obviously, for Batman.
Right. I believe, I'm gonna go ahead and leave that to the side, actually. But one of the things that has come out is Power Girl's costume.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were upset that her boob window has closed.
Whatever. Boob window, no boob window. Put Connor on the book, it won't matter.
The two things that they've said about this is, one, there's actually story reason for it. Because a lot of people, there was a story reason why she had it to begin with. So there's story reason why it won't be there. And B, she'll have the same silhouette.
Okay. I think most people can get behind that and agree that that's an okay thing.
And, lastly, one of the things that Dan said that they took out of Blackest Night that they actually wanted to bring out of it when they thought of when this concept was brought up to them and they started working on it was, Blackest Night was all about death.
Right.
And, you know, many.
Or undeath.
Yeah. And many of you may have even seen the viral video that came out about the death of Superman and how it was.
And how that was the death of death in comics.
Well, DC decided they were putting a moratorium on death with Blackest Night. And Dan DiDio said, as long as he's at DC Comics, if somebody dies in DC Comics, it's final. They stay dead.
Because, for those who don't know, the Blackest line, or Blackest Night storyline, what it essentially came down to was the reason that heroes kept coming back from the dead is that there was an actual entity causing it to happen. And in the end of Blackest Night, that entity is now gone. So that sort of superhero safety net.
They've closed the door on death.
Exactly.
The other part of that is there is one exception.
Well, Resurrection Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Also,
good book. Check it out. Haha.
All right. That is pretty much the end of the most important stuff that I was able to pull out of the DC panels that I went to.
That's a lot of good stuff, actually. Yeah.
I did get a chance to talk to a couple creators out on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Talked with Nathan Edmondson, who does The Activity.
Okay.
And I actually talked to him because
Yeah, he, well, you like the book, for one.
No, yeah, I love the book. And actually wants to know, yeah, and he, while he doesn't actually have some military background, he hasn't served, mm-hmm. He has actually gone out. They did get a chance to actually go out to, I believe he said it was, I want to say Fort Bragg, but it could just be that that's the fort in my mind. Mm-hmm. They did actually get to go out to military bases and observe special forces training techniques.
Oh, okay, cool.
And see how they actually do it. And they're actually going to be going on a tour of military bases, kind of promotional for them as well as just to raise the morale of the troops. And, you know.
That's nifty. Kind of like a USO kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of a USO type of thing.
And, well, that's cool. That's really cool.
So they're actually going to be out there interacting with the military. And the other thing is they're actually using those experiences, particularly watching the training and actual military history and putting those into the books. If you actually look at the back of issue 3, which just came out, they actually mention a event occurring, and if you look at the back, they actually have a bibliography of
explaining what it
military
is, what
events
happened.
That, yeah, these are yeah. real events that occurred. So it's actually tying it into reality by bringing these events
That's
in.
That's really cool, because that was kind of the same stuff that was in Unknown Soldier back in the Vertigo days that I really liked, because he had a whole kind of explanation at the end of every book of, here's what's going on in Acheuli Land that this book is based on. These things actually happened.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to see the same thing in the Authority. That's really, or, Activity. Sorry.
The Activity, yes.
Yeah, Authority's different company. Yeah.
And
who's the other one you said?
The other one I got to talk to was Robert Atkins, who's the artist on the G.I. Joe Snake Eyes title.
Oh, okay.
And he talked, you know, they actually got a little bit sidetracked with the Cobra Civil War and the mm-hmm. Cobra Command crossover series that are currently going on in the books.
Okay.
But starting with issue 13, they're going to be doing the initial story that he and Chuck Dixon had presented to IDW to launch the solo Snake Eyes series.
That's kind of funny. They present this whole thing of, this is what we want to do, and it's like, okay, we're just now finally getting there. Yep. A year later.
Yeah, it is a year later, but also, yeah, Dixon was also writing a lot of the crossover. He was writing Snake Eyes as well as the main G.I. Joe title for the crossover. And Atkins, you know, said, you know, this is the actual initial story that they pitched. They're going to be changing the title of the book from Snake Eyes to Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. And this is going to start going into their past. So going to see some interesting stuff coming on there. 13 will be a great jumping on point if you're interested in Snake Eyes or Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. So, yeah, go ahead and,
keep
your eye out for that, because they'll be wrapping up with the crossover stuff soon.
Yeah, all the infestation.
No, not Infestation, the Cobra Command crossover.
Oh, that, alright.
Infestation's its own thing.
Yeah, different thing. So. Alrighty. Well, that's pretty much all we got time for. We've run out of time to talk. We did have lots more things that we wanted to talk about this week, but unfortunately, we gotta get on getting on and, maybe next week will be a slow news week. And we'll have all the stuff we can talk about.
I don't think so.
It's worth trying.
Alright.
Anyways, thank you very much for listening. I am Justin Chalupka for Jason Polia. If you want to find out how to contact us, you can see that at about.me/comicbooktesseract. You can find us every week at thecomicbooknerd.com as well as on iTunes. Our Twitter handles are @FelixDCat and @JPolyev. @FelixDCat, that's with a K and two T's. You can email us at comicbooktesseract@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or text message by going to 50Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722. Again, thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next week on the Comic Book Festival.